Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. Part 3 of Immanuel Kant's Prolegomena to Any Future Metaphysics is entitled, How is Metaphysics in General Possible? And Kant is going to begin by making some very important distinctions between metaphysics and the two previous disciplines that we've looked at in Part 1 and Part 2 of the work, namely pure mathematics and pure natural science. And he's going to say that, this is the very beginning, pure mathematics and pure natural science had no need for such a deduction for the sake of their own safety and certainty. We know that they actually exist and they work and we can do them. So he says, pure mathematics rests upon its own evidence. That's part of what makes mathematics so nice. We know we do mathematics. We know that we can do pure mathematics. And so, you know, this is coming from the categories of the understanding, the pure concepts of the understanding, and also the engagement with pure intuitions of time and space, right? And then he says that the latter, that's pure natural science, though sprung from pure sources of the understanding, is based upon experience and its thorough confirmation. So pure natural science cannot refuse and dispense with the testimony of experience. So with all of its certainty, it can never rival mathematics. That's okay, right? What about metaphysics? Kant has said earlier in the work that, you know, strictly speaking, nobody's ever really done a metaphysics as such. They have a term that they use, but the real metaphysics is something yet to be, we could say, developed. And so he says that both of these sciences can never have stood in need of this inquiry, not for themselves, but for the sake of another science, namely metaphysics. We're kind of getting ready, or you might say rehearsing, in looking at pure mathematics and pure natural science for the more difficult work of figuring out how can we actually understand and do metaphysics. So he says, okay, so what does metaphysics do? What is its subject matter? He says it has to do not only with concepts of nature, which find their application in experience, but with pure rational concepts. So rational concepts, concepts coming from the faculty of reason. So there's, you might say, two parts to metaphysics, a part of metaphysics that has some connection to experience, and then pure metaphysics, dealing with pure concepts of reason. And he says these can never be given in any possible experience whatsoever. So what does this mean? The objective reality of these concepts and the truth or falsity of metaphysical assertions cannot be discovered or confirmed by any experience. And that's not necessarily damning if we're leaving out other things that Kant has said up to this point. Maybe there's the empirical side of metaphysics, and then there's the purely rational side of metaphysics. Can't be confirmed or denied by experience. Okay, but then we transcend and we enter the realm of pure rationality or something like that. Now, that's going to be an issue, as we're going to see. And this is an issue we cannot avoid. Why not? Because Kant tells us that this part of metaphysics is precisely what constitutes what he calls its essential end, its zweck, its goal, its purpose. The whole point of metaphysics is to do this stuff with what goes beyond and cannot be confirmed or denied by experience. So he says that the rest of it is only a means, and so this science is in need of a deduction for its own sake. So the third question now proposed relates, therefore, he says, as it were to the root, the origin, right? And then notice this term, the peculiarity, the eigentümliche, what it is that is really distinctive. You might even say the specificity or the property of metaphysics. What is unique to it? And what is that? The occupation of reason merely with itself and the supposed knowledge of objects arising immediately from this brooding over its own concept without requiring experience, which is one thing. something, or indeed being able to reach that knowledge through experience. And so we could think about, you know, all sorts of previous metaphysicians, all the way up to Kant. Plato's a prime example of this. We have this intelligible world, which you cannot see here. It's not material. It's not sensible. It's not within experience. But we can have some sort of intellectual experience of it through contemplation, and then we can grasp the world of the forms. That would be one example of what Kant is talking about here. And he says that if we can't solve this problem, reason is never really going to be satisfied. And here we see something really interesting being raised at this point in the work, something that is quite distinctive to Kant, but also to other thinkers as well. He says that the empirical use to which reason limits the pure understanding, so the stuff we've been doing up until now, does not fully satisfy what he calls reason's own destination. And the word that's being translated here is destination, Bestimmung. This is something that Heidegger will make much of later on, right? Destination could work for that, but also what it is that it's most desiring, what it is that will harmonize or resonate with it. Now, what is it? He says, every single experience that we have is only a part of the whole sphere of its domain, but the absolute totality of all possible experience is not itself experience. And notice what he's saying, you know, absolute, so the absolute, totality, ganze, right? In this case, the whole, the entirety. And notice that he's not using another term that has been translated as totality earlier in the work, in Begriff, right? So it's the whole. And we can think of the whole, we can desire the whole, we can drive after the whole, but we can never reach the whole in experience. It's not something we could experience. Just think about like the universe itself. Kant is going to talk a little bit later about the cosmological ideas. We can think of the universe, right? And we can ask ourselves questions like, does it have an end or is it limitless? How in the hell would you ever know that? You can't go out to the boundary of the universe, right? And even if you did, you could only go to one tiny bit of it if we imagine that sort of thing. You wouldn't get the rest of the possible limits. You can conceptualize, but you can never experience the totality. So he says, this is a necessary problem for reason. Human reason extends itself to these totalities. And he says, the mere representation of which requires concepts quite different from pure concepts of the understanding. The concepts of reason aim, he says, at the completeness, the Vollständigkeit, being brought to their perfection, their fruition, or the collective unity, the kollektive Einheit, unity being something that we strive after, right? Of all possible experience, and thereby they go beyond any given experience. And this is how they become, as he says, transcendent. So, you know, again, so far so good. If we took it just up to this point, we'd have a nice explanation. All right, metaphysics takes us beyond what we possibly could experience to something greater, and, you know, it transcends the experiential realm. Well, we got to be careful here, Kant is going to say. So we got to think about the difference between understanding and its objects and reason. So he tells us that the understanding needs the categories that it has, or concepts, for experience. And he says, this is the way the understanding, Verstand, works. What about reason? Reason contains in itself the ground for or of ideas. And he says, what are ideas? Necessary concepts whose object cannot be given in any experience. Now, Kant is going to say something here that might be a bit controversial. The latter, namely these ideas, are inherent in the nature of reason as the former are in that of the understanding. So that is something quite important. If we use reason to look at itself, look, of course, being a metaphor here, to scrutinize itself, we will find these ideas that we can't help running into and thinking of. And not only will we find in ourselves these ideas, we'll find them in everybody else, similar to how, you know, everybody's got the same categories of the understanding. Really big difference here, though, as he says, concepts of the understanding can be given. We can run into them in experience, and they can be confirmed by experience. Ideas of reason or concepts of reason, they cannot be given, nor can they be confirmed or refuted by experience. And we'll see this a little bit later when we get to the antinomies, right? So he tells us that this leads to some issues, some problems. He's going to talk about errors. He's going to talk about dialectic. He's going to talk about illusion. So the first reference to illusion, we've seen this brought up, you know, quite a bit in earlier sections, illusions. He says, illusion consists in holding the subjective ground of our judgments to be objective. We make a mistake in thinking that because I judge things to be this way, maybe express them in propositions, maybe think that I have knowledge or cognition of that, or erkenntness, right? That because I get things this way, everybody else does. Everybody else is compelled by the notions that I'm working with. So, you know, if that's the case, he says, the only safeguard that we have for pure reason in its transcendent use, going beyond experience, is going to be, you know, looking at reason itself, using reason. And we want to avoid, as he calls it, the aberrations into which reason falls when it mistakes its destination and transcendently refers to the object in itself, the noumena, right, which we can't actually get access to. So Kant is going to say, and he's using a metaphor here, that a lot of people doing previous metaphysics were building castles in the air without knowing the fitness of the material. And these architectural metaphors are quite common in modern philosophy, are they not? You see them in Descartes, we see them in Hobbes, we see them in all sorts of people. Well, what material are we working with? Ideas, right? And so we can't use them to build the same sort of thing as we would the concepts of the understanding. And this is what he says the critique of pure reason is doing for us. And without this, metaphysics is absolutely impossible, or it's a random bungling attempt to build these sorts of castles. So what sort of mistakes do we have to avoid? What sort of mistakes are we likely to fall into? He talks about, you know, the errors of pure reason being discovered only by reason itself, and this is going to lead us into what he calls dialectical use, or reason itself becoming dialectical by means of its ideas, and he calls this an unavoidable illusion, which cannot be limited by any objective and dogmatic inquiries into things, but only by a subjective investigation of reason itself as a source of ideas. And this is where he says, in the Critique of Pure Reason, in order to avoid this, I made a very rigid distinction between several kinds of cognition and the concepts belonging to each one, doing that, deriving them from their common source. Why? So that by knowing where they're originated, I might determine their use with safety and have the invaluable advantage of knowing the completeness of my enumeration, classification, and specifications of concepts a priori, and of knowing it according to principle. So doing metaphysics in a systematic way requires a critical examination of the transcendent ideas stemming from pure reason itself. If we don't do that, we're going to get into all sorts of trouble. So metaphysics has to, from the very beginning, if it's going to be an effective discipline, body of knowledge, a science, if you will, it's going to have to be both transcendent but also critical at the same time. And Kant takes himself as being the first person to actually do this and offer it to his readers. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.